Drive Time on RTE Radio 1 with National Irish Bank. The bank that brought Danske Bank's international expertise to Ireland is now bringing the Danske Bank name.
At the moment, political and media attention is focused on eastern Ukraine, but if this conflict has taught us anything, it is that it has the potential to spread. And a cursory glance at a map of eastern Europe and the Caucasus suggests a menu of options for Vladimir Putin should he pursue his ambitions for regional domination. Joining me now in studio, Tunico Bachon, lecturer in international relations at DCU, to see what the future potentially holds. Anders Rasmussen, the NATO Secretary General today, clearly has read his Winston Churchill very recently: more planes in the air, more ships in the water, more readiness on the land. Presumably this is in response to disquiet or unease in the Baltic states, particularly in Lithuania. Is that a realistic prospect for Putin, do you think? Or is invading EU countries or annexing them perhaps not just a step too far?
I think it is a step too far. I think that Putin is somebody who would know what the boundaries are. And what he's been doing over the last couple of months is testing the boundaries. And he's more or less found that what he suspected was true, that the European Union and NATO did not consider Ukraine to be as part of its sphere of influence, that it didn't have a protective security umbrella, and therefore he could act with impunity. I think he knows that the situation would be rather different with Estonia and Latvia, which have large ethnic Russian minorities as well, and therefore I don't think it's a realistic prospect. I think this is largely symbolic. It's showing that we can do, when I say we, of course I mean the West, can do something, but it's not really helping Ukraine. I mean, putting troops into Estonia or Latvia or Poland doesn't affect Ukraine.
Taking a step back now, this is a kind of a complicated two-part question, if you'd excuse me. Would we be where we are today if Ukraine hadn't looked at closer association and ties with the EU?
It's a hypothetical, it's difficult to answer, but my instinctual answer would be we would not be where we are.
Okay. So given that then, and you look at it, well, I'm going to play a little clip here now of the Moldovan Prime Minister, Yuri Lianca, who says, now, if anything, the events of recent weeks have promoted or suggested the need for them in Moldova for closer ties with the EU.
We never had a double rhetoric, one in Brussels and one in Moscow. We always had a very clear message that our fundamental choice is to join the European Union. Look at the situation in the Baltic countries from the point of view of the way political system works, how they are accountable, how where is the level of corruption, the justice, the economic prosperity, but has nothing to do with worsening of our relations with the Russian Federation or other partners from the East.
He's trying to be even-handed, but clearly he likes the idea of closer ties with the EU. Is he on a collision course with Putin now?
I think he probably is. It's a delicate balancing act. It's one that I certainly don't envy. These countries are geographically in a dangerous neighbourhood, and Russia tends to view, and this is something that George Kennan said many decades ago, an old Cold Warrior from the 30s and 40s, and he said that Russia tends to look at countries in its neighbourhood either as vassals or as enemy states, and you're either with us or against us. And if Moldova is making progressive moves towards the European Union, it does put itself on a collision course with Russia, that's quite certain.
The geography here is kind of peculiar because they don't share a land border with Russia, but they do share a land border with us in the EU. They're nestled right up against Romania, and the country is already split, and there is what many call a frozen war or a frozen conflict there since 1990.
There is a little entity there called Transnistria. It's a territory, I'd say, about the size of Tipperary, and it's got about 500,000 people. It's primarily Slavic in composition, and they're naturally disposed towards unity with Russia. At the moment, they're a self-declared independent state, which nobody recognises, not even Russia. But Russia has been using them as leverage against Moldova now for some years. And the hope that the Kremlin has entertained is that if they somehow hold out the prospect of territorial unity for Moldova, it will act as a barrier to them joining the European Union. That hasn't worked so far, as you can see. I mean, Moldova is moving towards the European Union, but it's something that Moldovan leaders have to constantly keep in mind.
And that frozen war, at which I think some 800 people died back in the early 1990s, how easy would it be to unfreeze, to stimulate again?
I don't think there's an appetite in Moldova for an internecine conflict. The conflict is not at heart an ethnic one at the end of the day. There's no such thing as a Transnistrian people, for a start. People of Transnistria are a combination of Russian, Ukrainians and Moldovans themselves. So I don't think that's likely to happen. I think what's more worrying is that Russia may feel, if Moldova moves too quickly westwards, that they've lost Moldova and they may as well take the part of Moldova that they can take. And that's what more or less happened, I think, so far with Ukraine, that more or less they figured they had given up on Ukraine, that Kiev was now a hostile government and therefore they would take what they felt they could get.
But the additional geographical complication here is that Transnistria, this little strip of Tipperary-sized land, would then be in the middle of Ukraine.
That's true, but that's not entirely without precedent. If you look at Kaliningrad, for example, this is a Russian enclave which is surrounded by the European Union, Poland on one side, Lithuania on the other side, and yet survives and thrives with Russian support. So it sounds unorthodox, but it has been done.
Okay, looking elsewhere, looking further afield to Belarus, it's in an entirely different category. Do you think that he would just be happy to leave that really rather unpleasant dictator there and doing his own thing?
Oh, I think so, because, and this is also the case with Central Asian states, Russia is not unusual in that it wants to find around it states which are like itself. The West has that attitude, America has that attitude, we have that attitude in the European Union. So Belarus is, as you say, a dictatorship. Russia is not a democracy, and therefore they're quite happy with the Belarusian regime, which has now been there for 20 years. They supply it with well below market price gas.
And are they happy for them to remain autonomous and basically, you know, you do the difficult thing of looking after rest of populations and people who are poor and just remain within our sphere of influence? Is that a status quo that Putin is happy with?
That's a status quo that they're happy with because, you know, for example, Putin's alternative to the European Union is the so-called Eurasian Union, and Belarus has signed up to that from the beginning. So has Kazakhstan, for example, and Kazakhstan has a large ethnic minority which is on the borders with Russia, which could quite easily be seized if the motive was there. But why bother? I mean, the regime in Kazakhstan is very friendly towards Moscow. It supplies Moscow with the same gas that was passed on to Europe. So there's no reason for regime change. Moscow's only moving against those regimes that it feels are threatening its hegemony in the region. And that's a reaction to a feeling that since the 1990s, Russia has been on the back foot, that NATO and the European Union have come to its door and it's time to put an end to it. And they have very clear red lines.
The Eurasian Union is something that's not widely known or talked about. And I think initially when the idea was mooted, it was regarded as something of a joke because it was just Russia and these two dictatorial client states. But there are more states now that are being pushed or dragged unwillingly into its orbit.
That's true. Armenia is one that's escaped many people's attention. And Armenia has its own kind of frozen territorial conflict with its neighbouring Azerbaijan. And Russia is using that conflict as leverage against both states. So it's true. It's a different kind of club. It's not really a club that's based on laws and rules as the European Union is. It's one more of satellite states, almost a resurrection of some kind of economic union as existed during the Soviet Union. And one might argue then that there's an attempt for Russia to reassert itself, essentially, and is trying, using methods which are not unfamiliar to people who've watched the region, to kind of bind these states together economically.
And does that mean that Ukraine is a salutary tale to all of the others, considering stepping out of line with Mother Russia's wishes?
Oh, very much so. And look, I mean, Yanukovych, the president of Ukraine, who was overthrown, you know, that was a response of people on the ground overthrowing an authoritarian, corrupt dictator. You can imagine how a person in the Kremlin views that. It's not a model they'd like to see replicated. And it's even important for demonstrating to its own people in Russia that this type of behavior is tolerated nowhere in the former Soviet Union, and therefore this virus will not spread to Russia. So it's not just a matter of keeping friendly regimes in neighbouring countries, it's also a matter of sending a signal to your own people that these types of activities, these types of attempts to overthrow governments won't work.
And what is the end to Putin's march? Is it a broken up, federalised, subjugated and beaten down Ukraine, or could you potentially see the entire country being embraced by Russia?
I don't think the entire country would ever be embraced by Russia. I mean, Kiev and west of Kiev is so virulently nationalistic and anti-Russian, not anti-ethnic Russian, but anti-Russian government, that it would be impossible to absorb. And I don't think it would be in Russia's interest. But other parts of Ukraine, which are better disposed towards Russia, it's not inconceivable that they would be annexed by Russia. It would be an unfortunate thing because, of course, it puts international law in question because there is process matters. I mean, when we look at the Scottish referendum, for example, in September. This is how ideally states take on new territories. But this is not being done in the former Soviet Union. Essentially a return to 19th century politics where you simply annex territories that are neighbouring to you simply because you want to.
Donika O'Bakon, thank you very much for that insight this evening.